Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding. And today we're going back to our series about old school bodybuilding, and we're going to talk to John Defendus. John Defendus was the 1988 MPC USA champion, but he has a big history in the sport going back to when he was a teenager. And he is famous or infamous for training with Steve Mihaylik, who was Mr. America back in 1972, I believe. And Steve developed this training system called Intensity or Insanity. So, of course, Mike Mentzer's training system back then was well known. And Mike would do the heavy-duty training system where he would train all out to failure. Steve Mihaylik would also train to failure, but he would do anywhere from 60 to 70 sets of body part. And John Defendus started training with Steve when he was only a teenager, and Steve almost killed him a few times training him so hard. So we're going to have a really, really good interview with John Defendus where he talks about the old days of bodybuilding, training with Steve Mihaylik, and then coming back in 1988 to win the MPC USA. He's got some great stories. All right, first off, I want to mention right off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I use to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest, and they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion, and he's also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia, Samir Banute, and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Or you can place your order at Amazon.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And speaking of Old School Labs, they released the interview that I did with Tom Platz back over Memorial Day weekend when I went out to Venice, California and trained at Gold's Gym. And I met up with Tom and I met up with Samir and we did interviews with both. And they just finally released the full interview with Tom. So that was really cool. It's on YouTube under Old School Labs channel if you want to check that out. So we talked a little bit about the 1981 Olympia and just about Tom's philosophy of training. And he had a great line in there. He said, it's more science fiction than art. And he goes, we need to get rid of the science and bring back the art. So I thought that was great. So check that out on YouTube when you get a chance. And last week on the Bodybuilding Nerds podcast, where they review all the podcasts for the week, Scott McNally was talking about my disappointment with not being able to interview Tom Platz, but I did talk to Old School Labs this week, and they said they're going to reach out to Tom and his wife and see if they can make that interview happen, because since we are both sponsored by Old School Labs, it would just make sense. So hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, that interview will still be coming up sometime in the future. And Old School Labs also bought me a really nice microphone that I'm going to be using. We're going to be start doing a series of weekly broadcast about what's going on in the world of bodybuilding. So that should be starting pretty soon, guys. So check that out. I think it'll probably be on YouTube, but subscribe to Old School Labs on the YouTube channel, and it'll be pretty cool. I'm going to be the host of it, and we're going to be doing short videos every week about what's going on in the world of bodybuilding. So that'll be coming up probably in November. And I've been doing a lot of seminars recently, and I got another one coming up this Tuesday. So if you're in the Central Florida area, where I'm from in Tampa, it's going to be at Trinity Ultimate Fitness, which is in Odessa, Florida. I have a phone number here. I think I mentioned it last week. I'll mention it again. It's 727-205-0427, and that'll be at 6:30 this Tuesday on October 30th, and it's a free seminar, and I'm going to be talking about the process of changing your body through diet and nutrition. So if you guys are in the area and you want to come by, I'll have my books there. So check that out at Trinity Ultimate Fitness, which will be in Odessa, Florida this Tuesday. And the diet is still going good, guys. I only got 2 more weeks until my photo shoot. So the pressure is on right now. I'm getting close, but I'm trying to lose that 1/4 inch a week, and I'm really low in body fat. So the training is really getting challenging, but I'm really pushing myself. I'm at that point now where my body fat is so low, and I'm not starving myself. I'm eating about the same amount of calories. It's the amount of calories that's allowing me to lose just that little bit of body fat each week, and I'm able to maintain muscle tissue. But I'm at that point now where I think because my body fat is so low, when I finish a set, I'm just completely exhausted. So that's where I'm at right now. And it is definitely challenging to try and get those sessions in. And I'm not doing a lot of cardio, maybe only like 3 days a week of cardio, but I'm really pushing it, and I'm hoping to lose probably another 1/2 inch, maybe even 3/4 inch off my waist before I do the photo shoot, which will be on November 13th, and that'll be in Chicago. And I might be doing a seminar in the Virgin Islands, which will be really cool. I'm going to be doing a seminar for the firemen and policemen out there in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And my friend Eduardo helped me set that up. So I might be doing that the following week after my photo shoot. So that'll be really cool. I hope that happens. And that'll be the week actually of Thanksgiving. So I'll probably be dieting all the way up until Thanksgiving. And then I'll be done and take a little time off, maybe a week or so off. And then I'll come back and just start training again for next year. Maybe put some size on. I think I'm going to stay leaner this time. I'm not going to bulk up like I did this year. So I won't have to lose as much body fat. I'll stay leaner. And who knows, maybe I'll get back in shape next year for another photo shoot, maybe a competition. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And last week I did an interview for Carl Lenore's Superhuman Radio. So if you guys listen to his podcast, he has a podcast that's on Apple. You can check that out, or you can just go to superhumanradio.com and check it out there. So that was really cool. We talked about the challenges of training when you get older. He's a real legend in the world of fitness podcast, and he's been around a long time. That was really an honor for me to be on that show. I'm glad he asked me to do it. And this week I'll be on Critical Bench's podcast. They also have a podcast, criticalbench.com. I've done a lot of videos for them in the past over the last few years. They started their own podcast. They asked me to be a guest on that. So I'll be on that Tuesday as well. So I'll give you guys information on how you can listen to that next week. All right. And last week's show with Richard Baldwin, I really loved that interview that we did with Richard. The thing I really liked about it was when he started talking about some of the guys that he met, some of the legends in the sport. Like, of course, he met Arnold and Tom Platz. He competed with Tom. But I really liked when he was talking about Serge Nubre. And he got to see Serge Nubre at his best. And he said it looked like he left his skin outside. And he was so big and full and ripped. And also the part in the interview where he was talking about Bill Pearl, when he saw him guest pose right before he competed in the 1971 Mr. Universe. And that's what I really love about doing the show, the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, is when I get to talk to these guys and they give me personal recollections of when they saw these guys, these legends at their peak. And you can't, you know, you just can't duplicate that from anywhere. I mean, it's one thing to see someone or you know, see a picture of someone or see pictures of them and competing. But when you talk to someone who was actually there and they got to see that person up close and personal, whether they were competing or guest posing or in the gym, it's just, you can't beat that. So that's why I really love doing the show and getting to talk to some of these legends who've seen other legends. I just think that's the ultimate. So that was a really great interview with Richard. I did not get any emails. You guys can email me anytime you want. As I said, naturalolympia@gmail.com. I haven't been getting too many emails from you guys lately, but I did get some comments on my Facebook page. John Defendis, who was our guest this week, said, Richard Baldwin is a great champion and a great man. I look forward to his interview. Pete Fancher, whose name on Facebook is Dennis Fancher. Pete was the chairman for the Central Committee out here in the MPC in Florida for many, many years. He just retired last year. And Pete has a great history in the sport. He competed for many years, and he, like I said, he was a judge for many years. He said, the best couples posing routine I ever witnessed in person was Richard and Laura Combs. It was artistic and a thing of beauty. And that's Richard in the interview mentioned that he was training Laura Combs for the 1980 Miss America when female bodybuilding just started. Brad Allen said, "Those arms on Richard, I can't wait for this one. Richard, such a nice guy on social media and brilliant." Shawan Malley said, "Great champion, great man." So those are some of the comments I got on the Richard Baldwin interview. And thanks again to Richard. That was a great interview. So before we get to our interview with John DeFendis, I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their brand new website, which is flalternativemeds.com, and tell them that you heard their ad at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you will get a free consultation. Plus, you will get 20% off your order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with the great John DeFendis, where he's going to talk about old school bodybuilding and training with Steve Mihalik. Hope you guys enjoy it. Here you go. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I want to welcome our guest today. He was Mr. USA back in 1988, the MPC USA winner. And he had a great career in bodybuilding, as well as some great training experience with the old Steve Mihalik, his intensity or insanity training. So welcome to the show, John DeFendis. Hey, John, how you doing?
Thank you very much, John. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, John, let's start at the very beginning like we always do. And let's start about how you got into bodybuilding. I know you had a very successful career as a teenager in the bodybuilding field. So what got you involved or what got you started in bodybuilding when you were a kid?
Real simple, John. When I was 10 years old, my mom was very, very overweight. Mm-hmm. She had a heart attack. This is 1968. And back in 1968, moms took care of the kids, and our fathers were the breadwinners back then, and
right.
You know, they made money, and mom took care of the kids. So in 1968, my mom had a heart attack and went in the hospital for quite some time, several months actually. Mm-hmm. And my dad it was kind of like, you know, okay, what do I do with the three kids? I was the youngest of three, and you know, do I take him for a walk? Do I feed? Have to feed him and give him water every day? You know, I'm kind of like
back then,
things were different back then.
Yeah.
And we used to eat dinner with the family every night. I mean,
right.
that's unheard
right.
of. You know, so what happened was she went in the hospital, and I wasn't of the age to go see her. So one time while she was in there, they held me up to the window, and I didn't know what was going on because all of a sudden my mom was gone. So what my dad did is he was a bodybuilder. He lifted weights. He had old York set, and he put a barbell in my hand. He said, "Son, these are curls, and this is a bench press, and this is push-ups and sit-ups." And you know, at 10 years old, I was exercising and lifting some weights.
Mm-hmm.
And so I continued that. And then when I was 13, my dad brought home some magazines. Dave Draper was on the cover of one of them, and you know, of course, Arnold was popular also, just coming into the scene. And I was just really, really intrigued. And I looked at this, and one night I went to bed and I had a dream. I woke up from a dream. I'd been training 3 years by then, and at 13 years old. And I woke up from a dream and that I was given the Mr. America trophy and from reading these magazines. And, it was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I ran over to the mirror and I pulled my pajama top off. I started posing like the guys I seen in the magazine. And here's this skinny guy with no muscles posing in the mirror. And the next day I went back to bed. The next day I woke up and I had one of those it was a 19 cent. I remember I paid 19 cents for this black and white composition book. And I was writing my work ethic and I wrote, "I will be Mr. America" in that book. And that was my goal from the time I was 13.
Wow.
My mom had her second heart attack that year. And so she went back in the hospital, and you know, I continued to train. Then at 15 years old, I competed in my first contest. It was a teenage suburban, and my friend had a license, and so he drove to New Jersey from New York, and there was a girl that I was kind of dating. I started dating at a young age, and I girl mm-hmm. I was dating and two other couples. And we went to the show at the Orange YMCA in New Jersey. And there was four people in my class in my first show. And, you know, I was excited. We had the prejudging. And then during the day, we went to movies. We had no place to go because we were waiting.
Right.
And my friends told me, hey, man, you won, man. You look awesome. You won the show. And I was excited. You know, it was going to be my first show, and winning your first show would be great. So I went back at night, and, you know, this is in the Orange YMCA. It's old rundown YMCA in Orange, New Jersey. And it had a wooden platform that was just plain wood, you know, nailed together and kind of shaky, and had a light bulb hanging over the top. I mean, you know, so they go to call out and say, okay, the top three contestants go out on stage, and they name the three people, and I didn't hear my name. So I went up to the guy with the clipboard and I said, yeah, I think there's a mistake. I said, I won the show. I should be out there. I'm like, and the guy says, what's your name? I said, Defendus. He said, sorry, son. You know, you didn't make the cut, you know? And I, what do you mean I didn't make the cut? I won the show. My friends told me I won the show. I ran out winning the show.
And, right.
You know, right. Obviously my friends might have been a little bit biased, but so that was my first contest. I took dead last, didn't get a trophy, didn't get to go out on stage, and you know, by myself. And it was you know, it wasn't like today, and you know, everybody gets a trophy. And so, you know, mm-hmm. I don't believe everyone should get a trophy, and that had a lot to do with it, I think.
Yeah, right.
so I continued to train. A year later, when I was 16, my mom had her was trauma hawked from a boat to the hospital with her third heart attack.
Wow.
And so it was that year that she got out of the hospital. She weighed 320 pounds. She had a tray full of medication. And so I said, my gosh, maybe I could help her. I have all this knowledge. I've been studying nutrition and training. And so I put her on a light lifting program with nutrition. And in a period of just under 2 years, I took 180 pounds off of her.
Wow. That's amazing.
So she went from 320 down to 140. And, jeez. You know, by then she had a first heart attack at 36, second 39, third at 42. And now she was 44, down 180 pounds off of her medications. Her life changed, you know? And
wow,
it was at that point, at that point I realized, wow, I've saved the life of the woman who gave me life. This is cool. And I feel God blessed me with an incredible tool to be able to help people. And so, you know, that's where I really started training people and made it my life. But at the same time, these two things come together, you know, the knowledge from bodybuilding and training and, helping my mom and then my bodybuilding career. So at 17, I competed against Tom Terwilliger in the Teenage Metropolitan New York and the Mr. Metropolitan New York. Now, that show was one of the stepping stones to the Mr. America. Most of the guys who won the Mr. Metropolitan New York went on and either won the Mr. America or, you know, at least one of the junior Mr. Americas. Mm-hmm. And me and Tommy were friends. We trained together in my basement. And so Tom Terwilliger ended up winning that show. I took second in the teenage, and he took fourth in the open. I took fifth in the open.
Okay.
Unlike today, the next day I invited Tommy over to my house and I celebrated his victory. And I have that
wow,
picture.
That's great.
I have the picture of me and Tommy eating big hero sandwiches and with our, you know, and I'm standing there. Tommy's got the first place trophy. I got the second place trophy. And,
right.
And I was like, and ever since then, Tommy has been one of the irons that sharpens my iron. You know.
Yeah, we just had Tom on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about that.
Yeah, I know. He's a great champion, just an amazing man, you know, and I've always looked up to Tommy. From there, the following year I came back and, I was training with Steve Mihalik, and Mihalik trained me, you know, when I first went to train with Steve, it was after that loss, and I went to train with Steve, and he said, why are you here? What do you want? And I said, I want to be Mr. America. I want to be like you. You know, I want to win what you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it was a hate relationship with Steve. I mean, I hated what he did to me and I hated the way he treated me, but mm-hmm. I wanted to be Mr. America. And what better way to become Mr. America than to train with Mr. America?
And how old were you at this time, Jim?
I was just turned 16.
Wow, 16.
At that time. Wait, at that time it was, okay, so I was 17. I'm sorry, 17.
Okay, okay.
17 years old. So he asked me, he said, do you train hard? And I said, do I train hard? I train harder than anybody. I mean, of course, I never seen Steve train.
Right.
Well, a week later, I was in the hospital. You know, I mean, he trained me into the ground. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Twice Steve put me in the hospital. Because I wouldn't quit. You know, most people, and if you go back and you look at the history of people who trained with Steve Mihalik, now we're talking about in his prime, not years later, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I brought Steve here years later when he was in his early 60s, and he brought some of my trainers through the workouts and go, oh, now I know what you went through. And I laughed. I said, you have no idea. This is the guy in his prime, jacked up on everything and, you know, speed before the workout. He would hand me a Black Beauty before the workout, and I'd go behind the water. I'd throw it behind the water fountain. And you know, because I didn't know what drugs were. And so he'd give me the Black Beauty, and I was against, in high school, I was really against drugs. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people ruin their lives. So he hand me this Black Beauty, and I, what is this? Well, it's, you know, you just take it. You get a lot of energy, you know, and I found out it was a Black Beauty. So I threw it behind, I'd throw it behind the water fountain. And as I threw it behind the water fountain, I'd get a drink, and I'd say to myself, holy shit, this is going to be tough, you know? Because the guy was a madman. I mean, no one could comprehend unless they were there.
Mm-hmm.
What this guy was like. Nobody trained with him. They'd go through one workout with him, that'd be it. They'd never come back.
Yeah. You know? What is a Black Beauty, John?
Black Beauty was speed.
Oh, speed. Okay.
Yeah, it was speed. It was the street name for speed Black Beauties back
okay.
then. And,
gotcha.
You know, because I didn't know what it was. I had to ask him what it was. Just take it. He said, well, what is it? It's a Black Beauty. It'll give you energy. You know, and you know, so I just always throw it behind the water fountain. But every time I threw it behind the water fountain, I'd be thinking, but maybe, God, maybe it'll make it
maybe
easier.
Maybe I should be taking it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but I didn't. And I just, it's incomprehensible, even to this day when I think about what I did. I mean, it's 16 years old. He was making me do 100-pound dumbbell flies. And the first time he told me, you know, when we did chest that first day, I remember the heaviest I had ever gone on dumbbell flies was I usually use 40s, and I think I had gone up to 60s once.
Uh-huh.
And so I remember that day he came in, he grabbed the 60s, and he was doing a warm up set with the 60s, and then I grabbed the 30s. He, what are you doing? He grabbed those. That's what I used. I said, I can't. Don't give me that. You're training with me. Look. If you going to train with me or you're not going to train with me? I mean, it was all fast paced. Grab the dumbbells, pick them up, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I picked up the 60s, and I managed to get a set of 12, but it wasn't really the set that you would, you know, call a perfect set, you know?
Right,
so then
right.
he grabbed the 80s and blew out 12 reps. And so I went to grab the 60s again. I got the same treatment. What are you grabbing those for? That's not what I grabbed. You know, so I grabbed the 80s, and I put everything I had into the set, and I managed to get out 12 reps with. I think he probably assisted me on, you know, maybe 4 or 5 reps on that set. You know,
yeah.
So then he grabbed the hundreds, and you know, and then and as I watched him grab the hundreds, I had this literally just this feeling, just like your heart just sinks, like. What do I mean, I just pictured my arms just ripping out of my body.
Yeah, you know? Right, right.
And so, you know, he made me grab the hundreds, and, you know, he gave me 4 reps at the hundreds. And, you know, 3 or 4 months later, I was doing the hundreds for sets of 12 because I learned at a very early age that if you are forced to do something over and over and over again, your body has to either adapt or it's going to hurt you. It's going to crush you one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't have an option because I wanted to be Mr. America. And I had this incredible will that really came from the fact that I knew it was the opportunity of my lifetime.
Those that don't know Steve Mihalik, for those of our listeners that don't know, Steve won Mr. America. It was in 73, I think?
72, Mr. America.
72,
75
okay.
Universe.
Yeah.
I think it was a 75 Universe, 72 Mr. America.
And Steve had this way of training. He called it intensity or insanity, where he not only pushed it to the limit, like, you know, Mike Mentzer did, where he just trained a complete failure, but he also did what, John, like 60, 70 sets of body part or something?
Yeah, we always did, you know, and it's funny because the intent, the whole intensity sign thing came when, you know, when we finished the workout and he, you know, and Steve wasn't my friend. He was, it wasn't like a friendship. It was a, right. It was a business, it was a business relationship and not a personal training business relationship. It was, I was the only guy that kept coming back. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand the philosophy of Steve Mihalik, which is almost impossible to understand. But the philosophy of Steve Mihalik was, if I try to kill this kid, I'm going to get a good workout. Okay.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And I embraced that philosophy later on. And the training partners that did train with me basically were tortured and benefited from it because my training partners, I put through, you know, I basically did the same thing Steve did. My goal was to annihilate, you know, in a good way, like try to annihilate that person by challenging them to do things that I would have to do in order to get them to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I ended up living my entire career is I'm going to push myself so hard that I knew when I was done with a set, that person had to do what I did.
Yeah.
Or at least attempt it, you know? So that was the thrill of it. But with Steve, it was purely survival, you know, on my part, it was purely survival. From him, it was, I'm going to kill this kid, you know? and my mother hated him. To this day, you know, God rest his soul, but to this day, my mom despises Steve Mihalik. She says, I hated that man. He tried to kill my son. He put you in the hospital twice, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a personal trainer relationship, you know, it was a training partner, but in the sense of, you know, I'm going to utilize this kid to make myself better, you know?
Yeah.
And in the process, it created the will that, you know, became my life so that anything I really set my mind to, I was able to accomplish because I understood what it took, you know?
Now you said you were in the hospital, John. Was that because you're just so worn out? I mean, you're like
the first time it was kind of weird because I was training for the Mets. It was the New York Metropolitan the year after Tommy beat me in the teenage, and I was training to win the overall. And I knew I had some formidable competitors: Dave Spector, Mike Torsher, Dave Spector. You know, they were going in mm-hmm. the show, and Steve was training me for the show. And I weighed 204, and you know the workouts kept getting harder and harder and harder. And the one thing that Steve, one of his biggest problems was that when he trained for something, he was such a perfectionist that he would just keep training harder and harder and harder and harder to the point where it's diminishing, you know, getting ready for a show.
Diminishing would, returns, you know, yeah.
It would get to the point where you just run yourself into the ground.
Overtraining.
You know, and I mean, you know, 120 sets. I mean, you know, it just kept getting more and more. I mean, we did one day, you know, I'll get into that more when I was training for the USA. But what happened here was he trained. We kept the workouts kept getting harder. And he knew the show was coming up. And he kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. And my body got run down. And, you know, I got a fever and I ended up getting – I had to run down, my potassium levels down, my minerals were off, and I ended up going in the hospital.
Hmm.
Well, when I went in the hospital, I was in really good shape at 204.
Okay.
And, you know, the show was 7 weeks away. And I got in the hospital, and they put me on, intravenous and, you know, sodium. And I was in the hospital for a couple of days. And by the time I got out of the hospital, I weighed 189, and I was smooth, you know.
Wow.
So, I had lost about 15 pounds from, you know, not training, being in the hospital. And only thing I had the intravenous. So everything kind of went haywire, you know.
Jeez.
Well, I get out of the hospital 189. And at that point, see, at 204, my goal was to come in big and ripped, you know. And I was looking at maybe 190, 192 would be where I probably would have been.
Yeah.
And now I'm 189 without a cut on my body, you know, full of water. And, and I got, I think, 7 weeks to the show is when I got out of the hospital. So I said, you know, let me do things differently. I'm going to just drastically reduce my caloric intake, you know, get rid of the carbs and just, you know, I was going to do something. It was a drastic measure, basically. And I trained every body part every day. But instead of doing high volume, I did about 9 to 10 sets of body part, but every body part every day. I kept my reps at 12 to 15, And I wasn't going to complete failure. I was really, you know, after getting out of the hospital, it run down. So I said, I'm just going to do, you know, full body pumps every day. Mm-hmm. And diet super strict, because it was, you know, it was basically a last ditch attempt, you know, to kind of salvage what I had built and then lost. So I ended up coming into the Mets. A week before the Mets, I went in the Teenage Suburban, and I was still a little bit off, and I got edged out by I can't remember the guy's kid's name in the Teenage. I got edged out. I didn't compete in the men's.
Okay.
And then that was 5 weeks later, and it was 2 weeks out. And then I went to the Teenage Atlantic States, won that the overall, took home every body part trophy, and then the following week went into the Mets, and I won the overall Teenage Mr. New York, the Metropolitan New York, and the Mr. the men's. Which to this day, I hold the record on that. Nobody.
Oh, really?
No teenagers ever won that show, because it's a very, very tough show. But no teenagers ever won the Teenage in the Open. And, you know, Dave took second. Mike Torsha took third. And it was a big victory. That was probably the greatest night of my life, even considering the USA, because that was the first major win that really put me on the board, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then from there, you know, I won the Eastern America, the Western America, the Northeastern America. I had 19 titles before I got to the USA. But the USA, the first USA I competed in, I was 21, just turned 21, or just shy of my 21st birthday, actually. And I was training for that with Steve, and I was in great shape.
That was in 79, Joe?
That was in 79, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was in great shape getting ready for that, and I managed my brother's deli. So I train in the morning, go to the deli, work the deli all day, and then train again at night. While I was getting ready for that show, I was sitting in front of the salads in the deli case, and I was sitting there staring at the salads, and I guess, I don't know what happened, but, man, I grabbed a spoon, and I grabbed a spoonful of the rice pudding, you know?
Yeah.
And then Steve had called me to tell me what time the workout was tomorrow, and I said, oh, man, I did something really bad. You're not going to believe this. He said, what? I had a spoonful of rice pudding. You know, I'd never cheated on my diet before that.
Right. Just one spoonful.
And a spoonful of rice pudding. And then, so he hung up the phone on me. And I tried to call him back. He was at the gym. I tried to call him, but I couldn't get him. I waited a little bit. I called his house. Thomasina, his wife, said he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And then I called a little while later, and she said, John, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, Steve's in the driveway, and he is pissed. He's so mad. He ain't getting out of his car. He just said, defenders, I'm going to kill him, you know? And if he said he's going to kill you, actually had to be worried, you know? So finally, I kept calling. Finally, Thomasina said, he's here. He don't want to talk to us. I really need to talk to him. So finally, I kept calling because I knew I was in trouble. So he got on the phone. He said, you be at the gym tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Don't be a minute late, and you better be ready. And so he hung up the phone, and I was like, oh, okay. So here's what happened. Basically, the way the body parts were broken up, or the way we trained back then, was crazy. It was, looking back, we did chest. Basically, we would do chest and shoulders in the morning and back at night on Monday.
Okay.
Tuesday was arms in the morning and legs at night. Wednesday was chest and shoulders in the morning, back at night. Thursday.
Yeah.
So it was six days on, every body part three times a day. So you gotta remember. We go in the morning. We do six days in a row, two workouts a day. It was 40 to 60 sets of body part. Minimum 40, most of the time 60. I have my books back from back then. It's mind-boggling looking at them. But a minimum of 40 to 60 set body parts. And I'm talking about hard and heavy, not, you know. You know,
right.
I laugh when people say, well, you know, anybody can lift light weights and do 60 sets. You know, it wasn't like that at all. I mean, my peak, I was warming up with 315 for sets of 30 on the incline. I mean, my strength was incredible.
Jeez.
And it was from all those years of training hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do 40 to 60 sets for chest, then 40 to 60 sets for shoulders, and then come back 7-8 hours later and hit it again, you know, with back, you know, and then you train it 6 days in a row. And then Sunday was incidentals. Okay. So we come in Sunday.
Jeez.
And it was
so no days off.
You know, abs, calves, and forearms on Sunday, you know?
Right.
Um, And every once in a blue moon, he'd say, "We're taking tomorrow off." And whatever he said, that's, I'm all for that. You know, I mean, right. I was just trying to survive. My goal was to survive. But so the day after I ate that spoon of rice pudding, I went in there and we started with arms, and we did, and I have it written down in a book here, mm-hmm. 90 sets of biceps, 90 sets of triceps. And then when we were done with that, sets. I was wiped. I mean, I was literally like at the point where, and then I was like, we finished this last set here. And, you know, so I'm pushing myself through the last set. I put it down. He says, "Okay." And all of a sudden I turn around and he's doing 12 leg extensions. And I'm like, "What are you doing?" "We're doing legs." And basically what it was he was torturing me for the rice pudding, you know?
Yeah.
And we did 90 sets of legs. And in my book, it says 7 o'clock biceps, 90 sets, triceps, 90 sets, legs, 90 sets. And my first meal was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh my God. Right? Unbelievable.
I mean, you know, and when I look at that, and then, so I went from training from 7 o'clock in the morning that day till probably 1 o'clock. Because, you know, by the time I got home to eat, 2 o'clock was the meal. And I sat there over my food. And I remember I even remember the meal. It was the lean ground beef from the like London broil, mm-hmm. Top round. Mm-hmm. And I remember eating the food, and I would put red wine vinegar on it. And that was my seasoning. It was red wine vinegar on my beef. And as I ate that meal, my head was just kind of just bobbing. And I was just really like lifeless, you know. And my mother said, you don't look good, you know. And I said, "I'm fine." And literally just kept getting worse. So she took me to the hospital, and it ended up, I literally had no, my potassium levels were very, very low at a dangerous level. And it was really from, you know, whatever it was, 7 hours, however many hours we had trained that day, you know? Mm-hmm. And they admitted me to the hospital, and, I was in the hospital for a couple of days where they had to get my fluids balanced and get everything. I mean, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just a matter of building a physique. It was a matter of lessons, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of lessons, you know? I mean, it was, a brutal mentality, by today's standards, it would be abuse, you know, it would be considered abuse. I mean, but people say to me, you know, I've had people tell me, "Well, what he did to you was abuse you." And, you know, cause I'll say, you know, well, you know, when I'll talk about somebody else's kids, you know, "Hey, when I grew up, this is what I went through." "Well, you know, you were abused." I go, "You know what? You could call it whatever you want, but it's what created who I am today. It's what made me the man I am today. The mm-hmm. person that doesn't want to give up, that's going to go for it. And it's going to believe in yourself because, you know, the end result, it worked out, you know?" But
that's what I was going to say, John, the amount of drive you must've had to keep coming back. And I mean, he had to probably be surprised that the 16 or 17 year old kid kept coming back, even though he's trying to kill you, you know?
Well, you have to understand this. I grew up in a championship household. My dad, you know, had trained since he was young. Mm-hmm. And you know, he had a very strong old school winner mentality. You know, there's only one thing that matters, you win, you know? And then my brother was a great athlete. He graduated high school with 12 varsity letters, 4 years, 3 sports, is baseball, football, and wrestling. And my brother went on, became a national wrestling champion, 2-time All-American, Coach Dan Gable's camp. I mean, was just an incredible, incredible athlete. And I was living in his shoes as a wrestler. I pretty much had to wrestle, and I was a good wrestler, and I got a scholarship for wrestling, but I didn't want to wrestle. It pretty much went like this. Well, you know, John DeFantis, he's a good wrestler, but he's not his brother. And
yeah.
I knew my brother was so damn good at wrestling. He was, it was just to watch him wrestle was incredible. And as good as I was at wrestling, I would always be, "Yeah, but he's not his brother," you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I had this love for bodybuilding, I mean, you know, and I met all these great champions as a teenager, Robbie Robinson, you know, Dennis Tenorino. I mean, just about everybody. I mean, so I knew this was my shot. And, you know, I look back and I tell people, don't blow your opportunity. You know, too many people, too many people are looking for the opportunity while they're in the middle of it, you know, and they don't recognize the opportunity. Well, I knew this. I knew this man was a great champion that literally, like, worked his ass off to become Mr. America. Yeah. And I knew he was teaching me what it was going to take to be Mr. America. And then, of course, you know, everyone knows the story, and the story's been stole from me by this guy on the internet, this motivational speaker, which makes me sick when I seen it on his thing. He's got millions of likes on it and all this
stuff.
Oh,
really?
But really, yeah, it's, you know, the beach story. I mean, most people know the beach story. It was, you know, while I was getting ready for the USA, you know, I remember we just finished a workout, and I just finished, it was a leg workout. We came out, and Steve had a Corvette, and we were getting in his car. We were going to go to the beach to get some sun. And as I was, you know, I was getting ready for that, and he was getting ready for a show. I forget which show it was. I think it was the Best in the World with Samir. He didn't go in, but Samir won that in 79. And I was getting ready for the USA that year. And we were in the car, and Steve never really spoke much to me. Like I said, it wasn't like a friendship. It was different than what most people perceive it to be.
Right.
It actually became more of a friendship later on. But, after we stopped training together, when I moved to Arizona. But what happened was, we're in the car and everything's quiet. And I turned to him and I said, I got to win this show, because I knew what I was putting into it. Everything I had, I put into it. I said, I got to win this show. What do I have to do to win? I got to win. I don't want to. I got to win. And it's in 79. And I looked at him for the answer, and he looked at me and he didn't say a word. And he just drove. So I said, you know, that was Steve. He didn't say much. Mm-hmm. So we get to the beach, and I remember it was in the morning, because we trained early. It was about 9 in the morning, and I went out to the water. We always went to the beach where there wasn't a lot of people, because, you're in your posing trunks, and we didn't, so we kind of went to a beach where there was hardly anybody there, if anybody. I don't remember, very isolated. And I went into the water, and I was about a little bit more than waist deep in the water. And I remember I was looking as the sun was kind of coming up, you know, it was kind of on an angle. And I was looking at the sun, and I was saying to myself, oh, my God. I remember thinking, I can't believe I got through that leg workout. It was so brutal. And, you know, so I'm standing there. I'm just looking out, and I'm thinking about how relaxing I was at that moment, having finished that workout. And all of a sudden, I get this whack on the back of my head. And Steve grabs my hair. I had the long hair, and he shoved me underwater and dumped me underwater. And I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea what was going on. And I'm swinging and swinging and, you know, hitting his legs. I remember I was punching him in the leg, trying, doing everything I can to get up, because I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. And so he pulls me up, and he pulls me out of the water for a second, and I managed to get a little bit of a breath, and then he puts me back in the water, and he's dunking me. And finally, I thought I was going to die. I thought, this guy has lost his mind.
He drowned you, yeah.
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And he finally just kind of shoved my head away, and he walked up the beach. And I was, you know, I come up from the water, and I'm choking, and, you know, I'm trying to get my air back, and I'm just dazed, and I don't know what. And I remember walking out of the water, screaming, "What is wrong with you? What did you do? Why did you do that?" And you know, I was in a panic, scared, in a panic, in a frenzy, kind of. And Mihalik just nonchalantly sits down, and he says, "Son, when you were under that water, what were you thinking about?" And I go, "You're crazy. You're out of your mind." I'm just kind of still going off, you know.
Yeah.
And he says, "I asked you a question," and he was very matter of fact. "I asked you a question. What were you thinking about?" I go, "I don't know what you're talking about." He said, "What did you want when you were under that water? What were you thinking about when you were under that water?" And I said, "I was thinking about getting a breath. I was thinking about breathing, getting, why?" And he said, "Because when you want to win as bad as you wanted a breath of air, that's when you're going to win." And, you know, the part that kills me, later on I found out it was, you know, that it's, that goes back to biblical times. I forget who it was. Mm-hmm. But something to that effect happened. But that was a defining moment in my life, as was the moment where I took Dead Last and didn't get to go out on stage, you know?
Yeah.
And I call these things defining moments, because we have these defining moments in life that make us, you know, either be great or not be great, you know, either mm-hmm. be greater and go for it. And so after that moment, every time those workouts became incredibly difficult and challenging, I would just think, how bad do I want it? I got to want it as bad as I wanted that breath. And I'd fight through it, and I'd fight through it, and I'd fight through it. And I think, you know, you're still alive. You're still living. You're breathing. You can do this, you know?
Yeah.
And it was that moment where it made me realize, you know, you do want it that bad. You've always wanted it that bad. That's why you're here. That's why you're doing what you're doing. And you're going to continue to work hard until you get that damn trophy, you know, until mm-hmm. you're standing there, you know, with Joe Weider handing you that award, you know, and that's how I lived every workout, you know?
Yeah.
And then you got, you know, people, you know, make up this story. You know, the guy who put it online as a motivational speaker, that he made the story about marketing and money, which really annoyed me more than the fact that he stole the story. He said, this guru, marketing guru and sales guy, sales master asked his student to come down to the beach, and he tells a story how he dumped the student, and he's, how bad do you want to be the best salesman, the best marketing and best salesman in the world, when you want it as bad as you want to breathe? And honestly, when I watched that, it just sickened me, because it wasn't about money, it wasn't about sales, it wasn't about marketing. It was about being a champion, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, the word champion has a very distinct meaning. It's a select group of people that are willing to do whatever it takes to achieve their goal, you know, that they're relentless. And I've put that whole concept into what is UltraFit, and what has been UltraFit for 36 years, is to be relentless in your goal. Too many people dabble in fitness, dabble in weight loss, you know? Mm-hmm. They start to work out, they're posting their pictures on Instagram, and they think they've mm-hmm. arrived, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the pictures in my album, I have an album in my Facebook page that has when I was 16 years old with the long hair. And, you know, if you look at those pictures, or if back in that early 70s when I was 16, in 1974 when I was 16, had those pictures been posted in Instagram, I would have got thousands of likes, and people would have told me how great I was.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I would have thought I arrived, and I probably wouldn't have went anywhere. But the truth of the matter is, while thousands of people would have thought I was an amazing, incredible bodybuilder at 16 years old, I had a coach, a mentor, that told me, "You think you have muscles? You look like, honest to God, I cannot tell you how many times he said, 'You're an effing skeleton with a wig. That's what you are. You're a skeleton with a wig. And
wow.
We got to put some muscles on you. Look at that picture of you on the wall.'" And he pointed to the picture of me when I won the Metropolitan New York. And, you know, mind you, I look like Zane. I was 172 pounds, and I won the, you know, I beat great champions like Dave Spector and Mike Torsia. And he pointed to that picture on the wall. He said, "You think that's muscles? You look," and he pointed to that picture, and he'd say, "You look like a coat hanger. There's nothing on that. It's just bone, you know?" And mm-hmm. the skeleton with a wig thing kept coming up, you know, skeleton with a wig. So this is how I grew up, you know, where today, if you told a kid, if I trained with a teenage kid and I said, you know, "Come on, man, you look like a skeleton with a wig," the kid probably go home and cry and get a blanket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a whole different mentality. We grew up at a time where you really attacked your goals, you know? And that's what I've preached over the years to every person I've ever trained and every client that we've ever had. And there's been tens of thousands of them over the years.
Yeah.
And it's been, you got to be relentless, especially when it comes to weight loss. People think, "Yeah, I'd like to lose some weight." You know, you have people who are over 100 pounds overweight saying, "Yeah, you know, I'd like to, if I could lose 10 or 20 pounds. Oh, first of all, you know, they're saying that because they don't believe that they can do it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I tell them, first of all, we're not going to lose 10 or 20 pounds. we're going to take off 100 pounds, and I'll tell you how you're going to do it. You're not going to dabble in it. You're going to attack your goal. And you know, years ago, I wrote the piece on relentless pursuit. It's like a shark. The shark tastes blood. It doesn't say, there's some blood there. Maybe I should want some of that. No, the shark tastes blood. It attacks it. It tears it apart. It does whatever it has to do to get that food. That's how we have to be when we go after our goals. And if we don't attack our goals, we're never going to accomplish anything. And you know that, John. I mean, you're a great champion. You've made your mark in bodybuilding. You're a great champion with a great physique, and it's been a lifetime. I mean, this is your life, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Steve, John, it's got to kill you when you go to the gyms today. If you go into some of these mainstream gyms and see all these people texting on their phone and taking pictures and everything after all the training you've done.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting, John, because, you know, I have like 100 trainers in the gyms now, and I've had over 500 trainers work for me and implement my workouts and my nutrition. All my trainers are using my program, my nutrition, my workouts, everything that I've designed for these people. And they're training. Our clients train. I mean, we have no cardio because the cardio is built into the workout. You know, people say, well, I don't understand how you can get in shape with no cardio. Well, you know, try doing 30 rep squats, 20 rep leg presses, and 15 reps each leg lunges, and get back to your squat and see how that works out for you.
Yeah.
You know, tell me if that's not challenging your heart more than that 4-minute walk on the treadmill that guy's doing over there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that intensity, that the cardio is built into our workouts. It's when it's no cardio, it's no conventional cardio, no treadmill, bike, stair machine. So, you know, the workouts are intense. We have 55, 60-year-old ladies that are training like they were training for when I won the Mr. America. Not at that level, but it's all relative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're being challenged to be great, you know, and that's what we promote. But, I mean, it really is, you have to, whatever the goal is, you have to set that goal and you have to have the game plan for it. And you live like that. I've lived like that my whole life. You know, we all face adversity. You know, everyone, you know, people say to me, you know, say, you know, how you doing? Well, I kind of went off my diet. And it's really went off your diet. So, why? Well, you know, I'm really stressed out. Really? You're stressed out? Huh. So let me get this straight. You're stressed out, you know, whether, you know, whatever the situation is, your kids, your family, your marriage, your financial situation. Okay. Now, when you went and you had that pizza and that or that cake or whatever it is that you ate, when you were done with it, that took away all your problems, right? All your stress was gone, right? Well, no, not really. No, you're absolutely right. Not really. See, when we cheat on ourselves, when we cheat, if a person decides they have a goal and they cheat on that goal, they're cheating themselves and they know it. And so deep inside, it doesn't give you a feeling of well-being and happiness and de-stresses you. Mm-hmm. Instead, it contributes to the stress because then afterwards, you feel like you failed.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like I let myself down. I failed. And what does that do? It increases your stress. And I tell people all this time, if you're stressed, that's the most important time to train. That's the most important time to stay on your, eating healthy and doing everything you need to do to go after your goal. Otherwise, all you're doing is adding stress to the pile.
Yeah. You know? What are your thoughts on Steve Mihaylik after all these years, John, now that he's passed away now and, you've got time to reflect on all that crazy training that you were doing back then? I mean, do you think he was trying to destroy you? Do you think there was something wrong with him mentally? Or do you think he was just, you know, a champion and that's just how he approached it?
Steve was brilliant. He was one of those eccentric, brilliant guys. You know, like, you meet these people that are brilliant, but they're a little off.
Yeah, eccentric, yeah.
That was Steve, very eccentric. I mean, he was brilliant. I mean, he designed equipment, like he designed his own equipment in the gym way before the equipment was built by major companies.
Really?
I mean, yeah, he was an artist, and he worked for the newspaper for years, and he did illustrations and art, and he'd draw out equipment, and he'd come up with these ideas, and incredible ideas, and he'd make this equipment and you're like, what is that? I mean, he built, I think, probably the first leg press you've ever seen, and it was about 6 times the size of a leg press. He had a room for it in the gym. One giant room.
Jeez.
And it was this massive machine, picture literally 3 times the size of the biggest leg press you've ever seen. It was this massive, giant machine.
Wow.
And it didn't need to be that big, but he made pretty much the first one. And
yeah.
It was like, what is it? You walk in the room, it's just one big room with a machine in it. And he'd load up that leg press. You know, this is in the original gym that he had. And he was brilliant in so many ways, and he knew how to press the buttons. You know, mm-hmm. I always say, people used to say I was crazy because I was intrigued by Charles Manson, and they said that you're sick. How could you be? I said, no. Listen, I don't love Charles Manson. I don't admire Charles Manson, but I just think this is what I saw in Charles Manson. If Charles Manson was able to channel his charisma and how he was able to get people to listen to him
mm-hmm.
into something productive, okay? If people were willing to go out and kill for this guy. So what if that guy was a football coach or a trainer or somebody who actually can get people to listen to him in a positive way, to do something positive instead
yeah.
of, unfortunately, the guy. I mean, obviously the guy was a madman and evil, and the outcomes weren't good. But if that guy had channeled that ability, and that was Steve had an ability to get you to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He had charisma. He was a good looking guy with a great build who had tremendous charisma. And anywhere I would go, the guy would walk in. If he even looked at a woman and said, "Wow, you're very beautiful," they would melt. It was really like watching people melt, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Anyone Steve sat down with, within 10 minutes, he could have gotten them to do just about anything he wanted to, because he had just this incredible aura and just charisma that was so incredible that you just wanted to please him, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
That was my thing. I all I wanted was from Steve, in those years we trained together, in the years following, was, you know, you did good. You look good. And I never got that. What I got was you're a skeleton with a wig. You have no more muscle than that coat hanger over there. You're nothing. You know, I mean, and I got that. And I wanted to hear, and it wasn't until years later, you know, and I didn't train with Steve after, you know, I left in 1980. I came back in 82 and I trained with him for a week, and then I didn't train with him again, or he didn't help me with anything in the 6 years between 1982 and 1988 when I won the USA. Bob Gruskin actually was my biggest support and coach, you know, in those years.
Yeah.
And but when I won the USA the night, July 31st, 1988, when I won that show, the first phone call I made was to Steve, and I said, he said, "Hello." And I said, "Steve, it's John." He said, "Did you win?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I'm proud of you. You did good."
Wow.
And that was it. And then it was, several years, years later. And I think it was 2009. He asked me if he could come down and work for me. So I brought him down here to, he wasn't doing good financially at that point. And
mm-hmm.
I brought him down here to manage one of the facilities that I have here. And, Steve, Ultra Fit, my program was designed. I took, things I learned, but then all the workouts were different. The theory of high volume is intact. It is high volume, but I changed everything as far as the order of the exercises, because I wanted to prioritize when you're building a great physique. The biggest area that you're missing in chest is your upper chest and rib cage and serratus. And, so I prioritized all those areas and shoulders. The area that we're missing and most people are lacking are those wide side delts. We want wide side delts.
Right.
Everyone starts shoulders with presses. And, I said, that's not, everything we do works our front delt, inclines and pec deck.
Yeah.
And, all these things hit our front delt. But what hits our side delt? Very little hits our side delt, because that's only going to be from lateral movement. So, all my workouts, with UltraFit and creating great bodies, the workouts are designed to prioritize the areas that everyone's really weak in,
mm-hmm.
There are some principles that I've used in the program, but very little. So then when Steve got here, he wanted to do things his own way, And I built the brand over since 1982 when I started UltraFit. I built the brand, and I couldn't have that changed. And it, not only did he want to do things his way, but he had new philosophies too, you know, because he listened to a lot of the bodybuilders, you know, the up and coming and the champions of the, you know, of this era more. And yeah. So he was, you know, after a workout, he'd tell me, eat a candy bar, you know, because you want that, you know, spike, and, you know, you want that, you know, insulin spike. And
right.
And then, but I said, Steve, you're listening to bodybuilders who are taking drugs, and they're telling people what to do if they were taking drugs. Our clients don't take drugs, nor do I want anybody to take drugs, you know?
Right.
So it become more of a conflict. And unfortunately, when Steve got sick and he had, you know, the true story is he got sick and his kidneys failed, and he was very depressed and went mm-hmm. in the hospital. And he told me, you know, I want to commit suicide because I don't want to be here. I don't want to be on kidney dialysis, you know? And he didn't have money at the time. And quite honestly, what a lot of people don't know, the people close to me know, is he couldn't work. So what I did was I paid him the manager's fee in that club, and I hired another manager. So I made no money in about a year and a half of taking care of him and making sure he had the means to live and go through what he was going through. And it ended up being about $75,000-$80,000 that I'd given him. And it was it was really, you know, it's funny because, you know, even something like that, you don't, a lot of times you wouldn't even do for your family. But
this is a man
that created the will in me, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I recognize that. And I wanted to do whatever I could, you know, to keep him alive and to help him out. So, you know, I gave him that money, and he didn't have to work for that period of time. And I introduced him to somebody who ended up donating his kidney. And then when Steve was finally back and, you know, he was ready to come back to work, he started to come back to work, and I was still giving him the money from the management. And then he went and he opened up a private training studio and ended up competing against me with a lot of the money that I'd given him.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
And so what happened was, you know, I distanced myself from him, and then he went through the facility, ended up going out of business. And then, I got that horrific phone call. It was a year later, where he had shot himself.
Wow.
It was very, very tragic. And, I love the man that was Steve Mihalik, who created the will inside of me. I didn't care for the person that, had a selfish side of him.
Yeah.
But you know, to this day, I love and honor him for, what he did to create the heart that I have, you know, as far as the heart, meaning the passion to want to be attack your goals, and the mindset of, you know, what you need to do to go after those goals, you know?
Right.
And, I ended up bringing his stuff up and going to the funeral in New York, and I gave the eulogy at the funeral,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so I wanted to honor him, you know, it was very tragic, but you know, you kind of knew that the end would be tragic for Steve because Steve did things his own way,
yeah.
You know, he was going to go out his own way,
mm-hmm.
he lived his life his own way, he did things his own way. And he had to go out his own way. And he was, you know, outside of that part of it, he was a brilliant man who did a lot for a lot of people without even trying to do a lot, because he instilled that same will in a lot of champions that trained in his gym, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, people like Joey Fulco and Jerry Scalise and, you know, and Tom got a piece of it. And we all got a piece of Steve Mihalik. You know, fortunately and unfortunately, I got the biggest piece, because I was what they called, you know, today the golden child that trained with Steve those years,
mm-hmm.
you know, those profound years where, you know, I did keep coming back regardless. And Flex Magazine just several years ago, I think it was 2012, they had the top 10 hardest training bodybuilders of all time.
Yeah.
And I was voted number 4 in the top 10 hardest training bodybuilders of all time. And, you know, Platts being first, which Platts was just an incredible animal. But that honor really meant more to me than even winning the USA, because it's about work ethic. And I believe that that's something that's missing today, that more people need to have that kind of drive and that will. And if it wasn't for Steve Mihalik, I probably wouldn't have had that drive and that will, and I never would have accomplished my goal of winning, you know, winning the USA.
He created you. So,
He did. He created that. He created the will. That will. That will is just, I mean, it got me through a lot of times, because that will was not only geared towards bodybuilding, through all the adversity we go through in life. And I've been through a lot of adversity, because when you drive that car around the track at 220 miles an hour, yeah, that speed is really good. But the problem, you know, that intensity is really good. But the problem is, you're going to have accidents, you know. Mm-hmm. You're going to face adversity. And I tell people, if you want to live a life where you're safe, you live a safe life, yeah, you can live that way. But the highs aren't going to be that high, you know. The lows may not be as low. You know, I always say my life has been, you know, it's had more highs and lows than the New York Stock Exchange, you know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've had some incredible highs in my life. I mean, being honored in so many ways, and the titles and the journey. Most importantly, the people I've been able to inspire and help, because that's the most important thing to me. But to be able to have all that. But then there were some lows that are, you know, horrific and tragic. And, you know, mm-hmm. That's just the way it is, you know, when you strive for something big.
Yeah.
You know, John, you know, you've been there. You've climbed that mountain.
Yeah. Right? Hey, John, I want to talk to you about your 1988 USA Championship in the MPC, and that was a great victory, probably your biggest victory of your career. And I know you always wanted to win the Mr. America, so this was almost like your Mr. America win, you know, because it was a huge national championship, and you won the overall.
Yeah, and, you know, and I, and that basically is the Mr. American, because they did away with the Mr. American place in Nashville.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, so basically, you know, I look at it that way, you know, but yeah, you know, as far as, you saw the competition. I mean, it was rough.
Yeah, I'm looking at the lineup now, yeah.
You know, I mean, Rennell Janvier had an incredible physique. And in fact, Rennell Janvier was really, I mean, his glutes and his hamstrings were sick. It's just crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember we were backstage at the USA. It was me and Troy and Jimmy Quinn, and we're sitting on the floor, you know, because we were all in the heavyweight division.
Uh-huh.
And Rennell was warming up to go out with the light heavies. And I remember he bent down to pick up a plate, and we were, the three of us were sitting there. And as he bent down, you see striations all over his glutes.
Yeah.
And just from him bending down and picking up that plate. And I looked at Jimmy Quinn, and I had this look on my face like, oh my God, an entire year of training my ass off.
Right.
Seeing his glutes shredded, it looked like somebody took a linoleum cutter and just sliced away at it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and the pictures don't even do it justice. I mean, when you're in person, you see that.
Yeah.
And I just was like, and I thought to myself, wow, this is it, man. I can't beat that, you know. But, you know, what it really came down to is, you know, the whole picture. And Rennell had good shape, but he didn't have, you know, there was nothing overwhelming other than his glutes. You know, he had that one body part, but if you would have put his glutes and his hamstring up to Lee Haney or any of the greatest champions and judged it by that one body part, I don't think anybody could have beat him. I mean,
right.
You know, it just, I mean, you know, but it's not one body part, as we all know. And thankfully, I mean, I won my class unanimously. I almost won the overall unanimously. I one judge put me second, but
yeah.
But yeah, it was a great victory. The greatest victory of my life.
What was your training like for that year, John? Were you felt like, you know, this is do or die. I got to win this one. This is going to be my championship.
Well, 1983 was my last show prior to that. And 1982, the Mr. America, it was still the Mr. America. Or I think that was the year. Yeah, that was the last year of Mr. America. Lee Haney won it that year. But me and Rory Liedermeyer were the two front runners the whole year in the magazine. So,
yeah,
you know, Defendus Liedermeyer. And,
yeah.
You know, I went out to California and I saw Rory, and Rory was 320. And jeez. I watched him do side dumbbell laterals with 120 pound dumbbells.
Unbelievable.
And he was 320 like a monster. I mean, and he was covered up, but you just, was massive. I mean, and Rory just, and Rory's another one of those eccentric guys, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you never know, you never knew what to think about Rory, you know? I just knew this. I really respected him. He had a great physique, and I knew that was going to be the guy to beat because that's what it was, you know, the both of us in the magazine the whole year. Well, it ends up 6 weeks before the Mr. America that year. I sent some photos to the NPC office, and Mannion said, "Wow, you look great, John. Really good physique. I mean, you know, think it's going to be tough. You and Rory, you know." And then what happened was Bob Gruskin, who was helping me, he was also helping Matt Mendenhall.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, how's Matt look?" He goes, if you want, I could send you some pictures." He said, "I did a photo shoot with Matt this week." So I said, "Yeah, send me some pictures." So he sent me pictures of Matt, and I got the envelope in the mail. I opened it up, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is Matt." I took the pictures out, and my gosh, Matt's never looked. Matt's one of the greatest bodies in the history of bodybuilding.
Right.
The guy has never looked like he did in these pictures.
Wow. I mean,
he was shredded. His triceps were completely striated, completely, right? So picture Matt Mendenhall's physique, completely in 100% condition, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was in these pictures. And I looked at the pictures, and that just, like, took the air out of me. And I said, "I can't beat that. I can't beat that. I know I was good, but I wasn't that good." And I said, I'm not, and I decided not to go in because I had already taken third in 79, and I vowed that, you know, in between 79, my third there, and then the USA in 88, you know, I had won the Eastern America, Western, all those other titles, but I did not want to go back to the USA unless I knew I could win it, you know?
Right.
So I just trained, and I didn't compete. I didn't compete in 84, 85, 86, 87. And then in 88, I decided, you know, 87, I went to the Nationals in New Jersey that Sean Ray won.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not going to compete anymore. I didn't think I was.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend invited me there. We went there, and I don't drink much. But for that Nationals, I drank some beers with him, and I got kind of a little loopy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there watching the show, and I was pretty much making fun of the bodybuilders. Turned to my friend, and I said, "Hey, see that guy over there? Yeah, he probably mortgaged his house, sold his car to get the money to train for this show. He's not going to make the top 15, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So I was the fox with the sour grapes, you know.
Yeah,
I couldn't get to the grapes, so I was going to trash the grapes. They're probably sour. Who wants them anyway, right?
Right.
At that show, I literally sat there, and me and my buddy, and I just kind of, you know, said, "These guys, they spend all this money, they do all this, and, you know, most of them aren't even going to place, you know." And Sean Ray won the show. He looked great, incredible bodybuilder, one of the greatest physiques ever. And then I went home. And to Florida, and I said, "You know what? I need to get away. I need to get a break." And I took a plane to Arizona, where I had lived once, and I love it there. And I rented a house and a car, and I drove around the mountains for a week. Just drove around, just spent a week by myself, thinking. And I came back, and I said, "I'm going to win the USA. I got to go finish what I started." You know.
Yeah.
And then I trained. I said, "I'm going to train for." I booked an exhibition 9 weeks away from the show, which is the West Palm in Florida. And I said, if my presentation and I look where I feel like I could win the USA at that exhibition, then I'll finish preparing for the show. So Ron Love guest posed that night, and I guest posed that night. And I got a standing ovation, and and everyone said, "You look better than Ron Love," you know, and he was a pro, and he was, you know, guest posing and stuff. So that night, at least, and so I put my mind to it, and I killed myself. I trained my ass off for it. So it all paid off, and it culminated in the one victory that I wanted my whole life. And I never thought about the Olympia. I never really cared about the Olympia or anything beyond that. And,
yeah.
you know. So it was the victory that I really needed. And like I said, the most important thing I got was that you did good. I'm proud of you from Steve Mihalik that night. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when you won that USA, John, and I remember reading in the magazines. I was so happy for you because I remembered your career as a teenager, and I could see your desire. You know, I didn't know you personally at the time, but I could see how, you know, dedicated you were, how you really had that desire, that heart of the champion. And I know you wanted to win, so it was so great to see you finally win it at that N88. And you won the whole thing. You beat a great field of champions. I mean, the lineup, if you look at that lineup back now, I mean, it was unbelievable, all those people. And you won the whole thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very fortunate. Everything came together, you know, and I didn't train, you know, people would say, hey, is Troy Zuccolato is the favorite to win. What do you think of Troy? I don't know. I don't look at anybody else. I never looked at that point. When I trained for the USA, people would always ask me about other competitors. And I said, I'll be honest with you. At this point, I'm not even looking at the magazines. There's only one thing that matters to me. I need to be 100% in my best shape ever. And I feel in the interviews that I gave prior to the USA, I said, I feel if I come in 100% at my best, nobody could beat me. And that was my goal. I never looked at another competitor getting ready for that. I just focused on what I had. You know, and I had known, you know, before that, DeMarco won the California or the L.A. He was, you know, he was one of the favorites. Troy was one of the favorites. I mean, so there was a lot of guys out in California. And, you know, here I was in Florida, so. You know, at that point, I just felt that, you know, I just had to focus on me because if I worried about anybody else, it wouldn't work out.
And then, John, the next year you did the Night of the Champions and the Niagara Falls show, but you didn't do that well. You weren't really ready for those, right?
Well, it wasn't that I wasn't ready. What happened was I guest posed in shape all year.
Okay.
And to me, it was so important to present myself in my best shape. And, you know, if you look at the pictures, like you've seen – the twisting back shot that I posted several times.
Great shot.
The hands overhead. The twisting back shot, that was my guest posing condition the entire year.
Wow.
And I literally guest posed in contest shape, and I trained for every exhibition like it was a contest. I would carb deplete in the beginning of the week. I would carb load at the end of the week. I would dehydrate. Uh-huh. I would do everything that I had to do like I was training for a show. And I did an exhibition every weekend for the entire year. And 6 weeks before the Night of the Champions, my electrolytes were off. Everything was off because, you know, obviously you can't stay in peak condition the whole year. And I did for the majority of the year. And then my body just, I was guest posing in that shape at 236. And my body fat was about 4% and in a water tank. And it was 236. And then what happens when my body just decided to just quit, my electrolytes went off, was off balance. I was run down. And because your body just couldn't handle it that long. And, I went to the hospital and the doctor said, yeah, you need to get a rest. So I contacted Wayne D'Amelio, who was running Night of the Champions. I said, I can't do the show. My body's run down. And he said, well, you have a contract, and if you don't compete, then you will have to pay a $5,000 fine, which is in the contract, and be suspended by the IFBB for a year. And, you know, I felt it was unfair because I said, you know, look, I got a note from a doctor saying I'm not in that kind of condition. But they would not budge on that. So I competed at 212 smooth. Okay, mind you, I was 236 in the exhibitions.
Right.
And I end up at 212. And I it was so embarrassing for me to come back to New York. And there was nothing I could do about it. I mean, my body was done. Yeah. It wasn't responding to anything.
Yeah.
So Mike Christian was sitting in the front row at that show. And I walk out and prejudging. And I see Mike look up. And I see, you know, Mike figured I was a favorite to win that show. I was on the poster for that show. That's why they wouldn't let me out of it, because I was on the poster for the Night of the Champions. And I was the guy on the poster.
Yeah.
And so I came out, and Mike Christian looks up, and if you saw his face, it was like he saw a ghost. Like his jaw dropped, and he's looking at me, and I didn't know what to do, because it was one of those things that if you're serious, it looks even worse. So I said, you know what? I'm going to just make fun of myself, you know? So I looked at Mike. in the front row. This is before we just came out in the lineup. I looked at Mike. Mike looks up, and I hit a most muscular pose. Now, mind you, a most muscular pose with no cuts, okay?
Right.
And I hit a most muscular pose, and I said, Mike, check it out. Shredded, man. Look, I'm shredded. And Mike starts laughing. And then I went through the prejudging like a professional, even though it was horrible. And then afterwards, Mike came up to me and said, Defenders, you one crazy MF-er. You know, he goes, man. He goes, I go, Mike, what was I supposed to do? I go, Mike, you know what? I gave the fans 100% of myself the whole year. I didn't want to let down one fan. And I said, it was really sad because most of the guys that I competed against on that stage, a lot of, not all of them, but a lot of those guys guest posed out of shape during the year. And then they peaked for the show. I gave the fans everything I could give them every exhibition of the entire year. And it's sad because the one where you're really in the magazines and it's pronounced is, you know, the Night of the Champions, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I fulfilled my obligation and then I retired from the sport because I felt that, you know, I really didn't really care much after that. And another thing is the direction of the way the sport went. I knew that it would kill me if I went in that direction because I'm a competitor and I would do whatever needed to be done. And I wasn't, and I knew I needed to get away from it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, really, the sport took a bad turn at that point, and it has, you know, it's become, you know, in our day, it wasn't, you know, drug abuse and, you know, it was more like you trained hard all year long. And if you used anabolics, it was the last 12 weeks, you know, and it wasn't abuse. It was, and not to condone it, but, you know, when I originally went to the doctors and it was put on anabolics, it was legal, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and you know, that was in the, you know, in the early 80s,
right. You
know, and it was legal. And, so, you know, it was a lot different and the sport had changed. And I knew, you know, I didn't want to get myself into trouble the rest of my life and we'll have to deal with, you know, especially side effects. And thank God, because, you know, at 50 years old, I'm healthy and I feel great, you know, other than that, you know, my shoulder replacement this year, you know, everything else is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I see your pictures on Facebook, John. You're still big. You're still a good, big, huge guy, you know?
Well, I plan on being in really great shape for my 61st birthday. I'm recovering, you know, the shoulder replacement just is a product of, you know, 50 years, because like I said, I started training when I was 10, so it's 50 years old. It's a product of 50 years of doing things that, you know, most humans don't put their bodies through, you know?
Right,
I mean, I don't know if you saw, last year I was doing presses with 330s for sets of 12 and laterals. Jeez. On the lateral machine with the stack for 30, 40 reps. I mean, crazy stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, your muscle can handle it, but, you know, unfortunately, as we get older, our joints, you know, at some point you're wearing them out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I feel good and I feel that, you know, I'm going to be able to be in great shape for my 61st birthday in May. And that's really what I'm looking to be, you know, really a good example at 61 and getting through this. You know, it's been about 14 weeks since the surgery. And so I just got to take, you know, just really taking it, you know, little at a time.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I'm going to look forward to seeing those pictures next year.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, you look incredible, John. I mean,
thank you, John.
You know, how old are you now?
55.
I mean, you look incredible. Amazing.
Thanks. Amazing. Thanks. And, I appreciate that.
You know, and the biggest thing with you and with the bodybuilders, our age, you know, Bill Grant, incredible. I mean,
Bill's great.
Another one is Richard Baldwin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Richard still looks great in his 70s. And, you know, they're very inspiring. They inspired me when I was a teenager, and they inspire me today, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But the biggest thing is making it a lifestyle. And as hardcore as I've been my whole life in the high volume and the tough sets, it's been a lifestyle at the same time. You know, people may say, well, you can't sustain that. But, yeah, you know, that's really about your mind, not the body.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, our mind controls where we're going. And if we feel like we're old or not, that comes down to the things that we're doing to stay young. You know, like, you know, look at you, you know, mid-50s, looking the way you do and having your quality of life. That's just incredible, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I feel. At 60 years old, I feel great. I, you know, my health, thank God, knock on wood, blood work, everything's pristine.
Great.
And, I got a lot to look forward to in the years ahead.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to finish with, the biggest thing is not so much with me, and I'm sure, you know, it's the same with you, is not our accomplishments. And this is the most important thing that I've ever, I talk about this a lot. It's not our accomplishments. You know, accomplishments alone are meaningless. It's what we do with those accomplishments. And, you know, I've always lived and believed that acquiring success comes, great responsibility comes with that success. And we have to reach out, inspire more people, help more people. And that's really what UltraFit's about, is inspiring people and being the example and showing people that they can do it too. Hey, you know, the thing that separated me from a lot of other people was the mindset. And that's something that everybody can achieve, that mindset, if they're around, surround themselves with the right people, with champions like yourself.
Right. Absolutely.
And, that's really, you know, my message is believe in yourself and be willing to do what it takes to accomplish your goal. Work hard and be persistent and you'll get there.
Yeah. And you're living proof of that, John.
Well, thank you. You are too, my friend.
All right. All right, John. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join us. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I wanted to do this interview for a while now, so I'm glad you're able to join us and talk about your career. I love hearing the stories.
Well, thank you. Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, John. Thanks.
Okay. God bless, man. Thanks.
You too. Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thank you to John Defendis for that great interview. And I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. We will see you guys next week. Take care.